This is Bloomberg Law with June Grosso and Mark Mills.
The monikers of some of those involved in the Drugs for Bitcoin online scheme, exotically called the Silk Road, are inventive. Super Trips, Underground Syndicate, and Friendly Chemist. But the creator of Silk Road chose his pseudonym from a romantic fantasy film, The Princess Bride.
The Dread Pirate Roberts wanted to retire. Told me a secret. I am not the Dread Pirate Roberts, he said. My name is Ryan. I inherited the ship from the previous Dread Pirate Roberts. His name was Cumberbund. The real Roberts has been retired 15 years.
Then he explained that the name was the important thing for inspiring the necessary fear. You see, no one would surrender to the Dread Pirate Wesley.
Perhaps hoping his identity would be kept secret as well. But federal prosecutors say they've unmasked the Dread Pirate Roberts, and his real name is Ross William Ulbricht, accused of being the creator and operator of the billion-dollar online website, sometimes referred to as the Amazon.com of illegal drugs. He was arrested in San Francisco in a public library while using the internet. The FBI says it seized bitcoins belonging to Ulbricht worth more than $45 million. He's been charged on four counts: operating a narcotics trafficking scheme, a money laundering conspiracy, computer hacking, and operating a continuing criminal enterprise. Joining us is William Shepard, a partner at Holland & Knight and the former statewide prosecutor of Florida. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Bill, what makes an online organization such as Silk Road such a problem for authorities, such a threat?
Well, I think what you're seeing is an ability to scale. He can scale his business dramatically. It's not unusual for people in the drug trade to trade narcotics for things other than money. Whether it's guns, I had cases involving stolen paintings, that's not the uncommon part. But those have to be very localized transactions, hand-to-hand deals. The ability to go to the internet and operate with co-conspirators all around the world and exchange things of value, whatever those are, gives him an ability to scale his business dramatically. Just the way a legitimate business owner would try and scale his business, these guys are able to operate using bitcoins to do it in ways that they wouldn't be able to do on the street corner.
The massive scale of this is astonishing. He generated, they say, Silk Road generated about $1.2 billion in revenue from early 2011. He is also a very strange character, as you can tell from his online name, the Dread Pirate Roberts. Was there something about the way he allegedly used Bitcoin and created this organization that made it so massive that it was called the Amazon.com of illegal drugs?
Well, I've never met him myself, so I don't want to speak to him personally, but I think anybody who is in this line of work, which ultimately is a sales business, it's their charisma, it's their strategic thinking about how they're going to make their product unique and different, right? I mean, he sells poison over the internet, but he convinces people that it's cool and that it's great, and that if you get it through him, everything's going to be fine.
Bill, I have heard that all transactions involving Bitcoin are traceable, so that it's maybe harder to do this in some ways than suitcases full of cash. Is that not the case?
Well, depending on how law enforcement is operating at the time, I think that could certainly be true. And I think as this investigation comes out, we're going to see more and more of that. When fax machines were first being used, everybody thought they could fax their criminal orders back and forth to each other and it wouldn't be picked up. And of course, law enforcement has the ability to intercept faxes just the way they would anything else. So anytime you're transmitting something over the wires, law enforcement has the ability to get a court order and to capture that information for use in a criminal case.
But is Bitcoin more elusive? We heard the representative from the Justice Department say that what it's doing is making their job of finding the money, tracing the money, much more difficult.
It's much more difficult. And as she rightly said, you can't just go to the local bank branch and put a subpoena on them to get the bank records. for your suspect, right? This is a much more complicated thing because there are no bank branches, and it's just individual people working through through brokerages that are sometimes not even in the United States, some of which had huge, what they referred to as bank robberies, so to speak. Some are closed. I mean, I think the real risk for people who consider themselves to be investors in Bitcoin is that the exchange that they're operating in will somehow get tied to one of these cases, and the government will make efforts to seize and seek to forfeit the money as a tool of the criminal conduct.
Bill, you sometimes hear about organizations that the feds or the state, well, it's usually the feds, are going to come down on, and that they do, and they just disappear. They get another URL number. So how does being on the internet make it even more difficult?
It does make it more difficult. You're right. I mean, they can just the way a drug dealer would drop one cell phone and pick up another one. You know, they can do this through the internet, and they can hide and mask their identity as best they can. But both state and federal law enforcement is onto this. I mean, it's not just Bitcoins. The work that state agencies have done around the country to go after internet child predators has a direct crossover to this. And the technology that law enforcement uses in that is really astonishing, and they do great work in that area. And I think you'll see that cyber crime detectives who are involved in one will just migrate over to the other, and you'll see quick increases in prosecutions in this area.
We've been talking about the increasing use of bitcoins by criminals and Silk Road, which has been described by federal prosecutors as a sprawling black market bazaar used by drug dealers and other vendors to distribute drugs and launder hundreds of millions of dollars from the illegal transactions. The prosecutors have charged someone as the creator, the founder, and the director of this organization. And his name is Ross William Ulbricht. He has been charged in federal court in Manhattan and is facing a trial in November. Our guest is Bill Shepard of Holland & Knight. Bill, when he appeared in federal court, Ulbricht, of course, pled not guilty, of course, and his attorney is Joshua Dratel, and he is known as being an attorney, a well-known attorney for terrorists, spent much of his career defending high-profile terrorist cases. He said that his client was not guilty and that the prosecutors had no evidence to really connect him to this online activity. What kind of evidence could prosecutors have against someone who was the anonymous Dread Pirate Roberts and used Bitcoin and was really anonymous from almost everyone in his organization?
Right. Well, Josh Tritel is a great lawyer. He and I worked together on the American Bar Association Criminal Justice Section Council, and you're right. He does do a lot of high-profile terrorism cases, but this strikes me as the sort of case that he would be a natural to be involved in. And in any case where you have a matter where the suspect's identity is really the main issue, the question is not really did people buy drugs on Silk Road and did people pay bitcoins to try and hide their identity. His defense in a case like this has to always be identity, other than something that the police or agents may have done that was improper and that they didn't follow their procedures. But identity is always going to be the issue. And so in any kind of drug case or any case where identity is the real issue, I mean, you see it in securities fraud cases. You see it where it's a defendant who's only dealt with people over the internet, or boiler room cases where they've only dealt with people over the telephone. The government always has to try and make that connection. They'll do it through physical evidence, but they'll try and also do it through live testimony. So, you know, we're not privy to the investigation at this point, but I would suspect that just as the government tries to use both types of evidence, that's what they'll be trying to use here.
You're listening to Bloomberg Law on Bloomberg Radio. Our guest is Bill Shepard, a partner with the law firm of Holland & Knight, and we're talking about Bitcoin and criminals using this, drug deals using this sort of thing as well. I do want to get a headline out for us here. Stanley Fischer has been confirmed by the U.S. Senate to be a Fed governor, a 68-27 vote, Stanley Fischer going to the Federal Reserve. Bill, if you would, give us some of the logistics of how a drug transaction, and we all picture these things, you know, the guys meet with the suitcase and here's the money, here's the drugs. We've seen it all a million times. Take us through that process and where they engage Bitcoin and how logistically it fits into this transaction.
Well, the deliveries presumably are all being made through some common carrier that's making the delivery to the ultimate customer here. And the Bitcoins is the confirmation of payment. Once that exchange is made, the delivery is made.
Right, so the guys are in the back alley doing their deal. Does one of them have a laptop open or something, and they and they get the drugs, and then they hit the key, and there it goes? I mean, is it something like that?
You know, I mean, theoretically, it could happen that way, but I think in this case, they're also talking about deliveries by common carriers. The case in Miami, where the state prosecutors are prosecuting two defendants in a Bitcoin transaction, they met in a chat room. Just the same way that internet predators would meet and exchange illicit photographs, these guys are meeting on chat rooms on the internet and structuring their deal and changing it.
But there is a physical transfer of drugs. I mean, drugs require some kind of face-to-face. Here's the stuff. It's a physical object. It isn't all electronic. So there's some kind of an eyeball-to-eyeball moment.
Well, there's not always an eyeball-to-eyeball moment with the seller and the purchaser. There's an eyeball-to-eyeball moment with the deliverer, but don't forget, the person who's making the delivery could be any person and not aware of what's in the package.
True.
So is that the way you said state prosecutors as well as federal prosecutors are investigating this by looking at the end of the transaction rather than the beginning?
No, I think they're looking at the beginning. I think in the Miami case with the Secret Services involved, that was in a chat room and people were trying to exchange bitcoins for an illegal transaction they were trying to do. And so it's just the same way the undercover detective might walk up to somebody on the street corner and say, hey, you want to buy some drugs? They're doing the same thing in chat rooms to try and create these Bitcoin transactions.
Bill, do you envision any regulation here? Is the government going to stand by and let this happen, or is there some way for regulators to intervene and somehow have a better handle on these transactions?
Well, I think you're right. I think that, you know, Bitcoins are not entirely an illicit currency, right? I mean, there could be perfectly legitimate uses for it. There are sports franchises that take Bitcoins to pay for things. There are online retailers that take Bitcoins to pay for things.
Let me just actually, on that subject, let me read a couple of headlines on the Bloomberg Terminal. If you look up Bitcoin,
sure.
Here's a few things. Bitcoin now accepted by soccer's Earthquakes. This is a San Jose team in pro sports. The Bitcoin payment processor BitPay reports $30 million investment. Election Commission votes to allow Bitcoin donations. Winklevoss twins seek NASDAQ listing for Bitcoin exchange fund. There's a lot going on here that appears to be quite legitimate.
And the Justice Department did say at that hearing that consumers have an appeal to Bitcoin because of the ease of the transaction.
Well, and that's right. And it's, you know, it's not just U.S. regulators looking at this. The Australian taxing authorities came out recently and said they're going to have some guidance on how Australian taxpayers should reflect bitcoins and the value. And, you know, is it a commodity? Is it a currency? When is the price? When you buy it or while you're holding it? These are issues that are going to be impacted by regulators all around the world as they look at these issues.
And Bill, one thing that remains the same as every other kind of criminal case is that there has someone that has turned state's evidence against Ulbricht. A Dutchman pleaded guilty in the black market Silk Road website. His moniker was Supertrips, and he sold cocaine, ecstasy, and LSD, one of the largest of the drug traffickers there. And according to prosecutors, for his plea of guilty, he is going to get no more than 15 years and possibly testify against the Dread Pirate Roberts. I assume that possibly is definitely. So back to the old.
Right, back to the old. It's just a narcotics organization just like any other. They just have a different way that the suitcase of money is delivered.
And you don't have that exchange, Mark, where they're waiting in an alley. And
that's what I always love to see.
You show yours and I show mine.
Well, then you always wait to see if the guns come out and they start shooting each other.
But what they do have, the prosecutors say they do have, they have voluminous amounts of evidence, they say, against Ulbricht, including a number of computer servers. So there must have been some place that they, when they raided and they found the Bitcoin exchange.
You know, they're going to have to be prosecutors, law enforcement people that are going to have to specialize and have an expertise in this and be able to dig into this and stay ahead of the criminals. Bill, is that something right. You think will be happening?
No, I think that's right. And just as we've seen in the child pornography area, there are detectives who spend their, you know, every hour of their working day working on these high-tech crimes and tracing these guys just the same way you would trace a Bitcoin transaction, and tracing from servers all around the world, just the same way we do now with data breaches and trying to do work on people who are stealing the credit card information. I handled the TJ Maxx case years ago as a prosecutor and was involved in that. You know, it's the same kinds of issues. It's the same techniques that law enforcement uses. They're just going to apply them to something different.
All right, Bill Shepard, thanks so much for joining us. Bill is a partner with the law firm of Holland & Knight, taking us through the Bitcoin situation here and the use by criminals and drug dealers. And we've got a little time left in the show today, June, so let's check some of the top headlines from BloombergLaw.com.
No cybercrime cases, but BNP Paribas, France's largest bank, fell to a 7-month low in Paris on concern U.S. authorities will seize more than $5 billion from the lender to settle a probe into alleged violations of U.S. sanctions. The amount sought in the probe of the lender's dealings with countries including Iran and Sudan has escalated and now far exceeds the $2.6 billion that Credit Suisse agreed to pay.
Anglo-Irish Bank, the defunct lender whose bailout almost pushed Ireland into bankruptcy, told a judge in Boston that ex-CEO David Drum hatched a fraudulent plan to hide his personal assets and avoid repaying a $10.5 million loan. The bank's lawyer, John Hutchinson, said in opening remarks at a trial in Boston that Drum can't use creditor protection laws to avoid repayment because he lied on his bankruptcy petition and tried to transfer cash to his wife. Drum, who now resides in Massachusetts, resigned from Dublin-based Anglo-Irish in December 2008.
Pennsylvania became the 25th state to have gay marriage declared legal by voters, so that's half the nation. A judge struck down its ban, evenly dividing the nation almost a year after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling triggered a flood of lawsuits. Pennsylvania joins 18 other states where same-sex marriage is currently available, and it has not been put on appeal.
All right, that's Bloomberg Law.
Listen to Bloomberg Law weekday afternoons at 12:30 Eastern, Saturdays at 7 a.m., 12 p.m., 5 p.m., and 10 p.m. Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.